Welcome to Crackers and Milk, the Crackers and Milk podcast. This is your host, David. I am happy to be recording another podcast. And also, I am joined today by my brother, Nathan, and my nephew, Sawyer. Thank you for joining today to listen. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and leave comments if you can, just to so that we can make things better. And that we can just help you guys enjoy this listening experience. So today, what we are going to be talking about, we are actually, because my nephew Sawyer, he has gotten into D&D in his short time here on Earth. And we want to talk to him about that, and then we would like to see where the conversation goes, because I think it's going to be a fun conversation. That's where we're going to go. You guys need to say hello and that sort of stuff.
Hello, David. This is Nathan.
Hey, Nathaniel.
Hey, David.
Hey, Sawyer.
Hey, Uncle Nate.
Hey, Sawyer.
Okay, so Sawyer, what really got you interested in D&D and why? Well, what got you interested in it?
Yeah, so when I was little, I was really like kind of fascinated with those types of games, those role-playing games. Me and my siblings, when I was about like 10, 12 years old, we made this game. I forgot what it's called. I think it was called like Adventures or something.
Yeah.
But it was a lot like D&D in a lot of ways without the dice. My brother would have like a character or whatever, and there would be a map, and he would be able to do whatever he wanted to do, and there would be monsters and creatures that came and fought him, and he would just have to use his imagination to kill them.
Yeah.
And it would just work anyway.
Was it just you and him, or was it you and your him and your little sister, or just you two?
Yeah, so it was me and him at the start, and then we brought in my little sister and my little brother too.
Huh. You literally invented this game?
So yeah, that, I've actually talked about that with my dad, and really? I'm like, Dad, if I didn't find D&D, I probably would have invented something like it, because I really did. I invented like a game that was like it, but maybe not inventing D&D, but maybe a role playing game, or got myself into something like that.
That's similar to D&D, right?
Yeah, it's really similar, and that sprouted into an interest for fantasy games.
Yeah.
And how I got into D&D is my brother showed me a video of a YouTuber. Their group name is Node.
Yeah.
And they were playing D&D, and I'm like, wow, this is really cool. And I asked for the books for Christmas, and I got them, and I literally got all of my friends that I had into the game. So I started it for my friends, and they got their friends into it, and I also got my brother into it, and he got his friends into it.
Yeah.
So I started the entire D&D community in my neighborhood.
So for those that don't fully understand what D&D is, could you do like a quick high level, what is D&D? How do you play that?
So the D&D at its core is a role-playing game where you have players that are playing in really a story that is constructed by another person, which we call the DM, the Dungeon Master. And he creates the story. He or she creates a story. And he's like the narrator for the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Like, so with being the DM and being the narrator, so do you, what are the responsibilities of the DM besides being the narrator?
So,
because like there's a lot, it seems like there's a lot, as we have talked about it before.
Yeah, so that's actually a really good question, because the DM has a lot of responsibilities. Not only does he narrate what happens when the characters say they want to do something and made their roles, and he narrates the what happens, he also creates the story that they're going to do. By creating the towns they go to, creating the quests they take, the monsters they fight, everything like that.
Okay.
Does the Dungeon Master create the character itself?
No, so the characters decide their character.
Okay.
So the players decide. So if like me and Nate were going to play it, we would have to decide our own character, like what the name is and what gender it is, right?
Yeah.
And then so what else would we decide in it?
So with character building, the DM, actually the DM does still have some say with that. So if the DM's trying to run a certain game, he or she could say, you need to build this type of character. You need to be this class. You can do this. But what I found is those type of DMs aren't really the best to have because they are really restrictive with they take away from the type of game you want to play, and they make you play the game you want to play.
Oh, yeah, that they want to play. Yeah. And then you said the type of game you want to play. Mm-hmm. That, to me, says that there's more than just, like, one type of game to play.
Definitely. So just, like, think about it like a video game, right? Okay. There's all sorts of role-playing video games. Mm-hmm. There's World of Warcraft. That's the only one I could think of right now.
Shooter games are role-playing games too, like GoldenEye. You have Zelda. Mm-hmm. You have Mission Impossible. But I don't know if they make a Mission Impossible, but like World of Warcraft is one. But then is StarCraft one? I don't know about StarCraft.
No, that's a strategy game.
Game. Okay, but like Halo is one. Mm-hmm. That would be like because you're going on a mission, and then all these like shooting up games, and also what's that? Fortnite? Isn't Fortnite more?
Nah, that's a battle royale game.
Yeah, but you still have a character. Oh yeah, okay, I get that.
I kind of get what you're saying though. Definitely. So yeah, so in D&D, there's this basic, right? Like the basics are you're in a medieval setting. Yeah. There's magic in the world, or there might actually, that's actually not a given. There could not be magic in the world, but you're in a medieval setting, and you can, what is it called? There's monsters to fight, there's things to do, and that's the givens, right?
Yeah.
Which are really small. And a lot of DMs or people, they take these and they can make it into whatever.
Yeah.
But there's really like, there's a core, there's like the basics that everybody does. Mm-hmm. And then there's really advanced, more advanced, what the term is campaign settings.
Yeah.
The basic campaign setting is like any fantasy book. You go to a town, there's a blacksmith, there's a noble, there's probably going to be a priest there that can give you potions. The basics of fantasy like that.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Which is a game I like to play.
Yeah. Like, okay, so you're interested in fantasy. You became interested in fantasy stuff when you were young. Why do you think you became interested in fantasy? Like, what draws you to fantasy and keeps you there?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it's the story aspect. Like, fantasy is
like creating that story, like building the whole world and creating this whole world about it. Like,
yeah, like that what you mean? Yeah, that was kind of vague. This story, that's a really good question. More of like the how in a medieval world where there's really it's really two different steps where there's the common people and then there's the. You could say the nobles, the elite, and all like that, where some of these normal people, they become these great, powerful people that are shaping the world or shaping their environment, mm-hmm. which I really like. Of course, that still happens in sci-fi. That still happens in other things, but I really like that about medieval fantasy or fantasy at its core. So, yeah.
Most of fantasy is like every time I think of fantasy, it's medieval. It usually is medieval, but couldn't it be also like space fantasy, or is that more, is that too scientific where it's just becomes the scientific, but not fantasy sort of aspect too? Like, is that,
I think it definitely can go to space fantasy. It's just, science fantasy, it takes a toll of like through technology. They go to space. They go through that. And medieval fantasy or fantasy, it's like through magic and through these mysterious things that go to space and go to things like that. Okay. So, yeah, which is a big part of D&D.
So when you're developing, because you really enjoy the DM part of it.
Yeah.
You like being the dungeon master.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to developing the plot, or not the plot, but you create the world, right? And then you invite the characters to come into the world.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to that, like, what are the key things that you mainly look for? You kind of touched on it a little bit already, but like, what are the main things that you look for when you're developing it?
Okay, so I look for, the first thing I think of is the plot. So I'll think, okay, right now they're going to be first level, they're going to be weak heroes, just getting the basics of their training down. What are they going to fight first? And how is that going to transition into level 20 characters? That's the end level. Level 20 characters pretty much fighting gods or fighting these beings that can destroy a city in one sweep, or these extremely powerful creatures. How will they transition to that? And how do I make the story interesting along the entire way? And the campaign that I recently created, I made, I kind of made it so everything kind of connects. So there's big bosses every five or so levels, but each of those bosses leads up to the next one. They're all supporting each other in a way.
Do you like, what? Because you said the highest level is 20.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know I've been around people, I've talked to some people where they do like the all-nighters, and you guys do them all. Yeah. You guys have done all-nighters too. Do you guys go from level 1 to level 20? In that one night?
No. So the funniest part about D&D is how long you can play it and how much of nothing you can accomplish.
Like, what do you mean by that?
So because it's a role-playing game, because you're playing with characters and everything, a lot of people like to act like those characters and kind of do things like that. So there might be a quest that they can go on, or monsters they can kill to get experience.
Yeah.
But they choose to be in the town and to steal a cow, which one of my players did, and he lost the cow, and they literally spend the entire session trying to get the cow back. And at the end of the session, they gain zero experience or in the same place. And but with some more of my experienced groups, they'll do the same thing. They pulled off a heist where they convinced a tavern owner that a bottle of water that they have dressed up like this extremely rare and beautiful wine was this bottle of water was this wine. Yeah. And they convinced him, they're like, it's this amount of money, which was a huge price of money.
Yeah.
And through persuasion, through them, their trickery, they made this bartender buy it. And they took that money and they went and bought a horse with that, multiple horses. And through that, they gained experience, but not as much as going to a dungeon or killing monsters.
Yeah.
How do they convince someone? Like, how's the persuasion happening?
That's actually a really interesting part of the game is how things are determined successful or unsuccessful is through dice, right? So you guys might have seen us play, and audience, when people play D&D, they have a bunch of different dice that they use. They have a D20 all the way down to the normal die, six-sided die. And they'll roll a die, and if it's a high number, they add their ability modifier that their character determines. And that number will determine if it's a success or a failure.
Okay.
And through that number, the DM takes that number that they got and determines if it's a success or a failure. And they'll pretty much what they did in that session is they're like, okay, I want to walk up to him and I want to be, we do character voices. Some people don't, but they walked up to him and they're like, this is the fancy bottle of wine, blah, 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 blah. And they would talk, and as the bartender, I would talk back to them, and I would have them roll this check eventually. And we would do a few rounds of that. Yeah, sorry if that didn't make sense, but that's kind of how it goes.
If it was me,
yeah,
I'd come up and I'd talk to you, try and convince you, But while I'm doing it, it's just the rolling part, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'd roll the dice. And how would you determine what numbers would make it convincing that they would win the argument or that they would lose the argument?
Yeah, so this is actually different DMs do it differently. So mm-hmm. what I do with my players is I have them talk as their character to me, and yeah. we'll kind of talk in between like an acting exercise. Yeah. And then I'll have them roll the dice if I feel like what they've said to me is good enough.
Okay.
Other DMs, their players just say, okay, I want to try to persuade this guy. And the DM's like, okay, roll. And which I don't find that as fun because I feel like D&D is more of that banter, that the role playing, which I really love. So, but with their roles and how I decide that, how they get that number yeah. is they'll take a 20-sided die.
Okay.
And they'll roll that, and then whatever number they get.
Like, give an example of a number.
Yeah, yeah. So let's say they're trying to persuade the bartender, right?
Yeah.
They roll a d20, and they get an 18.
Okay.
On their character sheet, it will have their stats, how good their character is at things, and they'll yeah. take their stat plus their skill bonus. Okay. And they'll add it to the 18. So let's say for a character, it's 5. So they take 18 plus 5. That's yeah. 23. That's a really good roll because yeah. out of 20, that's a really, really good roll. Yeah,
is most of the die out of 1 through 20, or are most of the dies that they roll that, or mm-hmm. is it 1 through 10, 1 through 9?
Yeah, yeah. So they're almost always the 1 through 20, the D20 is what it's called. Yeah. It's almost always the D20 just because it's a bigger dice. Players yeah. like rolling those, but yeah.
How do you know if they persuade you or not, though? Is it like anything above 20? If they roll anything yeah. above 20 with their character add-on?
Yeah, so the DM will always decide that number in their head. So what I'll do is I'll be like, okay, they're trying to persuade a bartender. They came out of nowhere. They're trying to persuade a bartender that this bottle of water that they've dressed up is this fancy wine that they're selling for, what, let's say 200 gold, which is a lot of money for a bottle, like wine, right?
Right.
And I'd be like, okay, they would have to get through above 20. And they did. And they yeah. managed to be able to sell it. Which
got
is,
it.
Yeah, that's how the game's kind of run and everything.
Got it.
Yeah.
So when all's said and done, you have full control. Because
yeah.
you're there, they have to meet arbitrary numbers to win or to lose or wherever the direction they go, and you get to decide that essentially.
Yeah. So if your DM doesn't like you, you probably
you're
shouldn't.
You're gonna suck.
Yeah. But yeah, that's why you try to get people that are like, okay, we're all friends here. We're trying to make a story, and that's how I view the game. I don't view it as I'm trying to beat my players. I'm trying to kill them. I view it as we're all having a good time creating a story. So. Because if I didn't like him, I'd be like, no, it's a bottle of water. No bartender's going to do that. But because we're playing a game, we're all trying to have a good time. It's like, yeah, you persuaded him. You got good rolls. Holy crap. You sold a bottle of water to a bartender for 200 gold pieces. Good job. And it's a memorable experience, which is why I love the game so much.
Okay. So like with that example of, you know, they got an 18 and they got a 5, 23. Mm-hmm. But what if they roll like a 10 and their thing was 5 and it was 15? Mm-hmm. Is there a number right there that would be like, okay.
Like right in the middle.
If they get to 15 or 12, it's past 10 where it's like, okay, it's a little bit more convincing, mm-hmm. but it's not the 100% like yeah. 20, 23 would be. Like, do you have a number when they're doing this? Like, okay, if they get to 17, okay, I'll do it. Or 15, is that high enough for you? Like, what's high? What would be high to convince you? Or what would be the lowest number to convince you to accept it?
So these things, when the players are trying to do something, it's called a check. And so that persuasion roll they made, it's a persuasion check. That's what we would call it. Now these, what you're talking about is actually more complicated persuasion checks. It's actually multi-layered dice rolls,
yeah.
which is how the players in my group persuaded this guy. Multiple players went and talked to him
yeah.
and A few of them got mediocre roles. A few of them got good roles. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, if they get mediocre and not horrible, yeah, mediocre, then it could keep going, right? The next person can talk. The next person can do this. And they could keep making dice rolls.
And that's just to buy mm-hmm. a good roll to yeah. get it.
Yeah.
Basically. That, they're just stalling for time to get that good roll, right?
Yeah, kind of. So,
kind of?
Yeah, so it's all about the experience, right? Like, yeah. you could walk up to somebody, and just like the first experience, if they don't get a good vibe from you,
yeah.
you're automatically, it's going to be harder to do anything with them. Yeah. But if everything else, like you talking to them and you getting to know them is good, then mm-hmm. they're going to get what they want. Yeah. So how the experience went is actually one of the players, they walked up, and they tried to sell the wine, and yeah. they got a really bad roll. They rolled a one, which is an automatic failure in
yeah.
D&D.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't believe you. Mm-hmm. And the funny part was the next player came up and was like, no, this is real wine. This is blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And this character was really, really talented at that.
Yeah.
So when he rolled, he also had a high roll.
Yeah.
And he was able to persuade the bartender. And then they built off of that to convince him. And through about like 30 minutes of bantering, they yeah. were able to convince the bartender.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So it wasn't just that one roll that was really good. Mm-hmm. They had to keep going and going and going and going yeah. until.
It was the experience. Is the journey. Yeah.
30 minutes and of you banter.
And you, like, you enjoy doing that. You really, really do enjoy doing that.
I love doing that. Yeah.
Do you love the aspect of the ability that you're creating the world, or the ability that you have the reins on the game? Or is it a mix of both?
Oh, like running the game versus creating
yeah.
the world?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I actually like both. So when I was creating this campaign for my players, the world, right, mm-hmm. I would spend, I don't know, like an hour a day. Some days I would take off and then spend a few hours one day just creating this world. I'd be on my computer making documents about the gods, about the culture, about the history of the world, and I loved that aspect. Mm-hmm. And then we would sit down at the table, and I'd be able to give them pieces and pieces of this vast information that I've created for them. And I love seeing them, these players, picking up a little bit of it and wanting to explore that section of it.
Right.
So, yeah, that's what I really love about it.
Like, what do you want to do with your life? What do you want to do with your life?
To be honest, I want to start my own business.
With, like, what?
With real estate.
Really? Mm-hmm. Do you really love that, though?
I don't know. I haven't really tried it. I do like selling things, though. I already got that. And business at its core.
Well, okay. This is why I bring it up.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
What you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Very passionate. And you really do love it. And it's a great hobby. Like, we've talked, not here, but outside, you've talked about it being mm-hmm. a great hobby. You love doing this hobby. You're taking this hobby very serious. You like creating, but you also like being in charge.
Mm-hmm.
To me, business. That tells me author, or that tells me director.
Yeah, so I've thought about those, and I don't know. I might become something like that. But
would you do that more like on the side to develop definitely. Those skills even more, because you enjoy mm-hmm. it? You enjoy it seems that you enjoy doing this off on the side, where it's like, look, I'm spending my time doing this because I really, really do enjoy it. So like I'm like that's why I brought it up, because like to me it's like, wow, he really does enjoy this. Why isn't he doing this more on the side? Where you just like, okay, this is going to be fun. This is going to be great. And then eventually, once you get old enough and you retire from what you really want to do, or what you want to do as a job and as a career, you could be like, oh man, I'm already into this. I know what I'm doing. This is what I'm going to do. Like, don't know. That's kind of just what I see with it. And then, like, to me, this, like, the podcasting and all this stuff is like, okay, I know I'm going to be a teacher for a while, for a little bit. But I don't want to do that forever because I enjoy it. I enjoy it. I really do enjoy it. I do enjoy teaching kids. I enjoy being around them. But then this stuff is more like, oh, this is after. Totally after, where it's like, you know, like that. As you were just talking about this and talking about how passionate you are, it's like, whoa, this is really cool. Like you writing a story or being an author, like writing a small story and building off like one character that came to your mind and building off that. It's like, whoa, that I don't know. I think that's cool, personally speaking, but yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely thought about that. And especially with how much time I've already put into it, I already know that I'm probably going to be doing this for my life, right? Yeah. I'll probably continue this hobby, but it's probably going to stay a hobby or at least maybe a part-time job. It definitely won't be my life or something like
that. Well, yeah, no, I don't think it could be. I'm just saying like the skills that you are already developing and perfecting now, like later in life, like, you'll be able to use those skills it's like, okay, D&D is going to be a hobby, but I can use these skills because I'm creating my own world. Let's figure out, okay, yeah, this is how I want to do my own world. This is how this idea came to you, and you can run with this idea because you already know how to develop a character. You know, a story, you know, setting, you know, all of that stuff where it's like, oh yeah, it's easy. This is what I want to do. This is how I would do it. And like you could write a whole book, you could write a whole movie, you could write short stories.
Yeah, like as an author or a director. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something I would do on the side. Like, because in D&D there's money in like game developing and things like that in the true company. Yeah. But or at least what I've viewed is there isn't a lot of money in actually making the game that when you're not in the actual company. Yeah. So I would definitely, if I wanted to continue this and make money off of it, I would be a author or director, like you're saying, but do something on the side. So, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Interesting.
For sure. With music, I mean, with like story development and writing, because that's a skill set, right? Like it takes a lot of imagination, not only imagining it, but writing it, articulating it, seeing what's happening. I think it's slightly different with a movie compared to like a story or a world that you're creating, being that you can have a bunch of just random crap everywhere, right? Scattered and like, here's this object. If they pick up this object, it's a whole, like you can have a whole experience with it kind of. But the ability to like imagine something and write it down, like that's a true skill set though. I think there's a lot like in places. And yes, I agree that like carving a way to make money out of that, I think that would take a little bit, that'd take a while, but holding on to that, I think it's pretty valuable.
But if you really look at authors and you look at directors, you look at all that stuff, like if it's anything you ever want to do, there is never an overnight success.
Yeah.
They put the hours into it. They put the hours into developing whatever skills they needed. And it's taken a while. Like I read this book or I was listening to this book about this guy who was an overnight success or labeled an overnight success, but he was like 42 and he was writing for like 20 years. And then one of his writings just clicked and it just took off. And so like, to me, it's like, you develop those skills now that you are doing, then maybe if that's what you would like to do with it, if you never want to do anything but D&D and that sort of thing, it's great. But like you can also, I don't know, I think it's just a great skill set to learn personally.
Yeah. I've found even in like school and social interactions, things like that, like storytelling, and this, like, building a world and doing all these things has helped out. especially with some things. Not as much as other things, right? But right. especially with some things, yeah.
Would you ever go, because you do the voice acting, you mm-hmm. do that voice acting with mm-hmm. your team, like, would you ever think to go into, like, drama and do that sort of stuff? I'm just kind of wondering on this.
So I actually, I've tried, it, like, when I was a little younger, going to drama and everything. I didn't go all the way because I was doing wrestling and everything. But I really never have really gone into drama. I might enjoy it. I might not. But maybe. Yeah, I definitely like doing different voices and doing that. And I do debate right now. Yeah. And we had to perform a story. Yeah. And I did my different voices and everything. And I like doing that. And I could do it in front of people, no problem. And I might consider going into drama. But that's never something that's really crossed my mind. So, yeah.
I would say it should cross your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because, like,
mind right now, yeah.
As being, because I took drama, 3 years. Like, I took one in eighth grade, and then I took some in my sophomore and junior year. But I had to transfer out of my junior year because I had to play basketball, or I played basketball, and so it was like, I always. That was the only thing that I wish I was able to do is drama, just because I always enjoyed it. But I got nervous. I get stage fright and all that stuff. But once I got things going, it would just be as fast as I could, because you'd have to memorize. You're so focused on doing this one thing, and then you're trying to act like this, and then not ever being a play. I did try out in high school to be in a play. But then having the opportunity to be in two plays as an adult, it's like, holy cow, this is actually pretty fun for the most part. Sometimes just drama, like drama within the cast, just kind of drove you nuts. Because, like, then you had cliques, you had this group over here, this group over here, this group over here. And so it's like that was the hardest part about it. But besides that,
yeah,
it was fun. Yeah, it was massively fun. And I think, I don't know.
Have you ever thought of, because you developed this world, you have these characters. Yeah. Have you ever thought, and maybe you had, but like when everything comes together, like you actually, you could record it or something to see what happens. Mm-hmm. Right. Because I was listening to a discussion with Quentin Tarantino, who directed, like, he has a very unique style on where, how he, writes and directs movies. He's like Kill Bill. What is the other ones?
Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight.
What's that one with John Travolta? Pulp Fiction.
Oh, Pulp Fiction.
Like, yeah. Wonderful or great Quentin Tarantino.
Django Unchained.
Yeah, Django Unchained.
Anyway, so he has this very unique cinematic style. But the way he was being interviewed, and like, because he comes up with, if he could just sit down, he could, like, his imagination could just go, and he could create movie after movie after movie. And they asked, like, well, where does it come from? He's like, honestly, he's like, I think of a character, I think of two people, and they just become these two people and they start having dialogue, and I'm literally just listening to them and I'm writing everything down. And then the story develops and and it ends up to be something that comes together, you know, takes some skill, but, it'd be very interesting though, if you put together this story and you have these characters come in, you record it, and then some, it'd be very interesting to see, like, reenactments or something physically, just to see, like, because the scenario with convincing the guy, a bartender, of water, I would be pretty funny, like little shorts, or like little movies or something, you know. But
yeah, the great part is like, there's been people that have done that, right? They've had these D&D stories and everything, and they take these memorable parts and they'll do a podcast about it, or they'll make a YouTube video about it. Mm-hmm. And I've thought about that before, and I think it would be interesting, definitely when I'm a little bit older.
Yeah.
But it would have to have a certain group of friends where we all like the game. We've all been playing the game for a while, and we all want to do that.
Right.
Yeah. With the group I'm with right now, it's kind of just more of a family thing, and we kind of like just doing it like that, but maybe when I'm older. But about the director, the funny thing is that's definitely happened with me. I've definitely, like, in wrestling, we run sometimes, and my mind will just go off, and I'll start thinking, if I direct it towards D&D or more fantasy stuff, I'll start thinking of a bunch of different outcomes that can happen. And it might not be dialogue in between characters, but it's like, what would happen if this happened, or I threw this at them, or blah, 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 blah. And that actually has branched off to some of the best ideas I've had for the game and some extremely memorable experiences.
Really?
But I even think that way in normal life. When I'm sitting down and doing something, I'll think, okay, what do I need to do to impress this person or to get this out of somebody? And I'll think of all the different ways, all the different things I can do and what will happen. So right. I think it's more of a like a mindset almost. So it's kind of cool.
Do you think that's just a mindset, or like, do you think because you have been doing that with the game that you've applied it more to regular life, where it's like you had so much practice with it that you have become so, it's just been so ingrained with you that you're like, okay, so I need to impress this person. This can be the outcome. This can be the outcome. This can be the outcome if I say these sorts of things or that sort of stuff. Do you think it's just been because you have so much practice with it?
Actually, probably. Maybe. I don't know. It could be a mindset. It could be that. I don't really know. That's a good thought right there. Mm-hmm. But it's just interesting to see how writers think, how authors think, it's interesting to see how everybody thinks.
Well, like with your ideas, with the ideas with D&D, like, so you read the books, right? Mm-hmm. To get more ideas. Mm-hmm. Or is it, do you also listen to podcasts, watch YouTube videos so that you can get even more and be like, oh yeah, that's something I want to try? Or how do you get more ideas with it? But besides, or like what would, because I think sometimes with us, there's just something that somebody says and then it sparks our imagination with this one saying. It's like, okay, oh my gosh, I can go do this, 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 and this, and this, and this with it. Like, how do you get your inspiration with these stories and get the ideas besides just thinking about them?
Yeah, that's definitely true. With the examples you're giving with something somebody says that inspires you or books and movies, I definitely get inspiration for movies, especially fantasy movies. Mm-hmm. Like World of Warcraft, they made that into a movie, and a lot of people didn't like that. A lot of my friends were like, no. I was like, wow. I go out of the movie theater, I'm like, holy crap, I can watch that 20 times over. That's like D&D.
My D&D worlds are endless.
Exactly. And it was just like, it was so, it's not the best movie when I think back to it, but I thought it was like the best movie I've seen in a few years. And it's just because it was a lot like D&D and everything, and it gave me ideas for the campaign I was running. But how I get ideas, especially recently, I like listening and watching other people play D&D. I like Critical Role, which is a big one. And they'll give me ideas and they'll give me things they do, and I'll put it in my my campaign.
Critical Role is it like a YouTube channel? Or is it like a group of guys that play and they classify themselves as like
Critical. Yeah, so a group of guys that they get together and they play D&D and they're all voice actors.
Oh,
so they all do these different voices, and the DM's like doing, you'll have to watch it. It's just crazy. He does a bunch of different voices and all that, but I'll also pull inspirations from books and things I listen to, like The Stormlight Archive by Brandon Sanderson.
Mm-hmm.
My dad got me into that, and I love that series, and I implemented a lot of stuff into my campaign from them, that. So, yeah.
Ooh.
For the actual voiceovers, and because that's what you do, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For the actual, like, as a DM, do you assign the specific voice that they're doing? Or do you just say, because it's their character, right? So mm-hmm. I guess they come out with the voice and the whatever, the speech impediment or whatever it might be mm-hmm. to the game. And then you just like let them free world, like you're going to be who you are in this scenario.
I think this part is one of the best parts of the game. So I don't require my players to have character voices, but I strongly encourage it. So we'll be playing like, come on guys, come on, just use your character voices. And I tell them I'm just encouraging them. And if they really don't want to, or if they don't feel comfortable, then they don't have to.
Sure.
But the game blossoms when they are using the character voice. So a quick example, the campaign I'm doing right now is for my family. My dad, he's playing a wizard, and he has he's already doing a character voice after the first session, and it is hilarious. So this is his wizard, and it's just a deep, like kind of funky voice. you guys know my dad. I don't know if you guys know my dad, the audience, but Nate and David, he'll do it. And the first time he did his character voice, he was talking to another player, and he was like, no, we shouldn't do that, or something like that. And I just couldn't stop laughing for a straight minute just because of I've never seen my dad getting like a dramatic or like acting like that. So it was really funny to see. So, yeah.
So, but I know you encourage them to use their voice. Do you choose their voice or do they choose it?
Yeah, so sorry, I didn't really address that, but they totally choose their voice.
They choose it.
Yeah, so some of them, they can be really interesting. So,
what's been the most interesting voice that you've had?
Let me think real quick.
And it's a voice, I'm assuming, because they can choose any gender, they can choose any mystical creature thing, or does it have to be someone that can communicate?
Well, yeah, I have a few rules with that because some of my my old group, some of them tried to win the game instead of play the game.
Okay.
So they would try to like be certain races that are just like overpowered, right?
Okay.
So they'd be in the game. It's kind of limited down to certain races, but they can pretty much they can be whatever. But with voices and everything. The most memorable voice was probably, there's been a few of them. There was, his name was Martin, and he played a dwarven cleric. So like a dwarf, a small guy that's just huge and buff. And when I voice our dwarves, I would have a very deep voice and very structured and or like, you know.
Yeah.
But his dwarf had a really high-pitched voice. And he's a cleric, and he gives to, like, everybody. And he would go around and be like, here, have some coats, and blah, 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 blah. And his character was a male, and it was a stronger guy. And he would walk around, and as we're imagining it, and he's talking, and it was a really memorable voice. Oh, that's awesome. But another one was, his name was Autumn, and it was my friend Hayden's character. And he was a human, but it was the accent he put on. It was always a French accent, but it switched from French to Italian to like German sometimes because he could never keep it straight. And we just had the best experience with that. Like sometimes the other players would be like, wait, you're German now. Be like, you're not French anymore. And we would laugh about that. But yeah, there's the voice part is a really good part in the game. Yeah.
That would be hilarious to record.
Oh yeah.
Like full on, like legitimate, like and have mics there. Right. Where, and it would kind of bring an element. Hopefully people wouldn't shy away, but like bring an element of like, I gotta be real. Like this voice gotta be legit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it would, they'd have to have guts. Like, because a lot of times when you have that mic in front of your face, it's like, okay, I gotta have guts.
Right.
I can't back out of it. Like you said, it has to be.
You gotta be committed.
That sort of, yeah, totally. And you'd have to definitely find a group of guys who are willing. A group of people who are willing to do the voices, and willing to go all out. Like Nate said.
Yeah, the thing about character voices, with my experiences and everything, what I found is that it's really just waiting for them to kind of come out of their shell or to blossom. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my character, a lot of the players I have D&D, it's, you get a lot of socially awkward people.
Yeah.
And they would have a really hard time speaking in character, doing a character voice. But once they did, once they started doing that, they had a good experience. I had a good experience. Yeah. It just made everything a lot better. Yeah. And as we blossomed as friends and everything, they started doing different voices and they started interacting with NPCs and doing different things. And it just made a really good experience. So, yeah.
NPC.
Yeah. What is an NPC?
A non-player character. That would be like NPC. The bartender or a merchant or just anything.
Which
that's not
you
a player.
Superimpose. Yeah. You are the individual, like the NPCs of. So you actually, as an M, what is it?
NPC?
A DM. Doesn't have an actual character. So you're not playing the game.
I'm all the characters.
You're all of them. Exactly.
All of the players.
Exactly.
Yeah. So sometimes they'll be walking around the city and just to like spike interest or whatever, I'll do a beggar voice and I'll be like, oh, please spare some change or whatever. Right? And I've already come out of my shell and I do some weird voices sometimes.
Yeah.
And they'll laugh and I'll laugh, but it's just about creating an experience and making memorable moments, which is the best part of the game.
Right. But you literally are like an MC as well. Like if that makes sense, you're like cultivating the culture itself, which is... which I bet that's satisfying as well, that if you can create something where multiple individuals can engage and like have interest and you're personally dynamic enough to bring that to the table, I bet that's pretty satisfying as well though.
Oh, it's so satisfying. So I'll give you an example. So in one of my more recent campaigns, I spent a lot of time creating cultures and different factions, and just the politics and everything. And each player was interested in different things, right? So one player, a lot of them were actually interested in just tricking people, which made some really funny experiences and everything. But one of them was really interested in the culture and how people acted and everything. And they would go around and I have different voices for different, like, economic classes pretty much. So they would go and talk to really the people like farmers and everything. And they wouldn't really talk to the players at all because these farmers view the players as higher than them because these adventurers, they can venture off, they can kill monsters, they can do pretty much whatever they want and get gold and riches from them. And these farmers are stuck on their farms, plowing the fields, getting grain for their village.
Yeah.
So the farmers would treat them with, like, you're above me, just get out of my face so I can do my work. But then they would go and talk to, like, a merchant, and the merchant would be like, hey, how's it going? Like, blah, 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 and, like, try to get all the money out of them because the merchant knows they have money.
Yeah. Right.
But then there would be other merchants that are like, leave. You cause trouble. Get out of my bar right now. So,
and each of those experiences is just coming from you.
Yeah. So,
however you feel that NPC is actually, it's NPC, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. NPC or MPC?
N.
None. Yeah. NPC. Yeah.
NPC.
N. Is you get to see, like, and I think that's also pretty interesting, right? That like you are the one that gets to see how they react to, okay, this person, this is kind of like how I feel like I want to approach this. And then they react to that. Like, it's pretty dynamic.
It's so great. I got to tell you, it is funny seeing them how they react to some things. Like, sometimes how I also encourage them to use their character voices is sometimes when they're not speaking in game and they're speaking to somebody else, I'll talk to them as an NPC. I'll be like, wait. You're going to kill the mayor? Wait, you're going to go rob the bank or you're going to go do this? And they're like, whoa. That wasn't me. This and they're like, use your character voice, man. So, but yeah, it's funny to see. I'll give you an example real quick. So one day they were in a city and I needed to get a point across that this really powerful guy, his name was Adam Hellcaller. And he was all about industry. He was the leader of industry in the kingdom. But he's this horrible person that they're eventually going to have to overthrow and everything in way later in the campaign. So what he does is he takes this petty, like this man that stole bread to feed his family, throws him on the street and hangs him in front of everybody to see. And the players were like, what's happening? And they tried to free him. But I'm like, look, guys, if you try to free him, you're probably going to go to jail and you're probably going to, you might end the campaign because this. But they managed to help this guy out through other ways without getting caught, which created a story, which created memorable moments, which is what I really like.
Right.
Yeah. That's awesome. Right. With these, like, as you talk about memorable moments, it just reminds me of kind of like a lot of what our family does. With, we want moments where we want to have a memorable moment with somebody else, like that connection that we want. Like, I remember playing basketball one time, and this girl, she wasn't very good, but I know I was a little bit better, but I wanted her to have a good time, kind of like what you do with your D&D. It's like, I want to have these people have a good time. Let's create something. Let's have this good time. And that's what happened with this girl, and I passed her the ball. She shot it. I told her to shoot it. She shot it. And then I just turned to her. I'm like, great shot. And like, she was running back and she just had this like little smirk, just like a nice little smile on her face where it's like, look, she felt appreciated. She had this moment. I don't know if she remembers this moment at all. I don't care if she remembers it. It's like, I remember it. And it brought me happiness because, oh, I have this memory the rest of my life. And just like you have these memories of and these memorable moments in these games for the rest of your life. All these people can forget about them. All of them can be like, well, they're not that important to me. But to you, it's like, oh, man, I remember this. I remember this. I remember this because I was having fun.
Yeah.
And it was or not fun. Joy probably mm-hmm. more joy would probably be because joy would be more of a powerful word that you can carry on for a lot longer than just fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I thought like as you're talking about these moments, it's like, yeah, that's, he's always going to have these.
Yeah, that's a great part about D&D or thing about role-playing games is honestly, there really is no winner. Like, it's all about creating happiness, creating joy in the group, and really creating these memorable experiences. And it might not. Like, other people might think these other games are fun, like Monopoly or chess or whatever they're playing, these other board games. But the reason why I like D&D so much is, look, it's not a competition. Yeah. We're all getting together as friends, and we're just trying to create a story that we all like. So, yeah.
And I think, like, with some of the games, because our family plays games, We play a lot of board games. We play a lot of card games. I think it's more, we do want to win because we're competitive people. But at the same time, like, the moments stick out more than who wins and who loses. Like, because it's that bond. It's the bond. But like with D&D, where there is no winner, there is no loser. The only time you lose is if you don't create these moments, if you don't create these positive experiences with each other, that's when you both lose. Because it's like, well, you're not taking it as serious as you should, or serious enough where we can enjoy each other's company and have these bonding experiences and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, there's always that downside to competition. You know, like, you win, you get that great feeling from winning. But look, there's another person there and they're not feeling that and they're having a bad time, or they might not be. They might be happy for you, which is great, but they're not having as fun of a time as you.
Yeah.
Their pride or whatever's hurt. But the thing I really like about D&D is that, look, there isn't that. There, of course, there's going to be a little bit of that because everybody's competitive and that's just human nature, right?
Yeah.
But it isn't like, I'm trying to beat you. I'm going to backstab you. I'm going to do this. I'm trying to win. It's like, we're having a good time. Let's just relax and go rob a bartender. So,
yeah. Which ultimately, though, as the DM, you have full reign over that anyway. Like, if someone comes approaching the table and has that mentality, you have full reign that, like, pretty much the chances, you know, because some people play games because there's an element of chance and someone wins, someone loses, but you pretty much can direct that. And regardless, some mentality, yes, the guys can come in and be like, yeah, I want to dominate this. And you had mentioned that, and it wasn't as fun. Yeah,
those players are not fun.
Yeah.
I've had them before. They're not fun.
But you still can kind of steer that. Like, yes, if they're going to come like that, they're probably going to have a bad experience anyway, because you're probably going to stop them in whatever they're doing, because you create that. But
yeah. So the hard part about the game also is that you really got to have, everybody's got to be up for it. Because as a DM, yeah, I can kind of do that. I'll explain it like this. It's like they're a ship on the ocean, right?
Yeah.
As the DM, I'm the sea, I'm the air, I'm everything else. What I want to do is I just want to blow on the sails, right? To kind of push them in a direction. But there still can be one player that's like a yacht, and they turn the boat like in the opposite direction. Everybody else could be fighting them over that. So you also have to have a really good group, not only a good DM, one that's fair and just. You also have a good group that's like, okay, we're here to play a game, not a competition, right? Yeah. But yeah.
Have you ever gotten a fight
over it?
So some of my friends like take it. I take it seriously in the way of like creating story. Some of them take it like view it as a competition.
Yeah,
and I don't know why, but they like they won't talk to me, or they'll actually get mad at me. Or sometimes there's been when I'm having a bad day or they're having a bad day, and we start yelling. We're like, "What are you doing?" And my personality is like, "I'll yell back." And if I'm having a bad day, it gets there's been a few times where it's gotten bad, but you know, you just learn and grow from that. It's almost like a family, in a very small way, where, look, we've had those arguments, we've had that, but that's not what it's about. Like, let's all calm down. We can compromise, and which is what we've learned. So, but there are some people that are just like, no compromise. If you don't give me this, I'm leaving, or I'm going to do this stuff. I'm like, really?
Dude, right.
What's wrong with you? We're just playing a game. Calm down.
They really do that? They really threaten that to leave?
They'll threaten some things. Like, I don't know. You know, D&D, you get a lot of diverse people.
Yeah.
And some of them really just do. They act like that. And I'm like, look, you can act like that, but just calm down. Don't throw drama into it. We're just playing a game. We're just friends, right?
Because that's what's hard is as a DM, too, though, that you could be blamed for everything. For a lot of things.
And they are. And I am.
Everything. For the good and the bad, though. Like, yeah, if someone has a terrible day and they really wanted to make... That's the thing, is you make it captivating enough. They really want to make it on a certain quest, or they want to make it on a certain thing, and it ends up not being like that. You could easily be
they almost see it as real life. They're like, if I don't get this, I'm gonna flip out. And I'm like, okay. There's certain times where I'm like, look, you're getting mad over this, and we'll build it up and we'll both get aggressive. But there's other times I'm like, okay, it's not a big deal. And it's just like there. Or there's other times where they're like, it's not a big deal, I'll give it to you. Because I'm not perfect in DMing, right? I've flawed. I've been made mistakes, and I've been stingy over stupid things. But it's like that's the bad part about it. Like I don't really remember. There's some moments like that I remember, but the memorable moments totally trump those. So
I could see that.
Awesome. What's the gender dispersion? Are there any girls that play? Have you ever played D&D with a girl?
Yeah, so anybody who's listening, please do not be offended by this, by the way. So D&D, it's really a male thing. I have played with girls. The girls are great to play with.
So they have played.
They usually, but it's extremely rare. And they usually don't like playing because I don't care if girls play or not. Like,
right.
I really don't care.
But it's not a selection thing. I think it's just a matter of population.
Yeah, and like it's almost like because me and my friends will get together and we're all guys, right?
Right.
And when a girl comes in, it's almost like they're singled out. Like it's a bunch of guys. Some of them are socially awkward, and socially awkward guys have no idea how to talk to girls. Like I was like that at one point, and I still am a little bit like that. But I've kind of grown and everything. but like they would be different. They wouldn't be their characters. Some of them would even go so far to like oppress these girls and everything, you know, because you get this kind of socially awkward crowd. Here, I'll give you an example. There were these two girls that played. Their names were like Kenzie and Aranza, and Aranza kind of liked the two of us. And this other girl was kind of just there playing the game, and everybody changed her characters. So we went from like guys that are just messing around, to, like, well, we're doing all that, to like, yes, we are doing this. Let's go on the quest. Lady, let me give you this gold or something like that. But that doesn't always happen. Like, that's exaggerated, definitely. But yeah, there are groups that have girls in it. That works. I would be fine to have girls in a group. The group I'm playing with right now, my family, is there's two girls and three guys. And it's great. Like, yeah. But usually it's mostly guys just because of the...
Is it also because of the social stigma behind...
Definitely.
D&D, where it's like, oh, these guys are a bunch of, you know, kind of like losers. They don't have a life. They don't have anything. Some of it is like because they're socially awkward. So do you think it's more like partly because of the social stigma of D&D?
Definitely so. I can't get into D&D as much just because of the social stigma in high school, right? Like, I try to hide that, and I don't really like that aspect. It's a confidence thing, definitely, but it's also like, if everybody knew I played D&D, it would just something that you don't need to know, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever. That's how I view it. But at the same time, with girls and everything, I think there was a lot of that when the game first started, and it was really like almost only guys.
Yeah.
And now as the game has grown and it's way more popular, you see a lot more girls playing. Like in high school, in the club, there's probably like 60% guys, 40% girls, or 70-30.
That's
like
pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good percentage. Not as good as 50-50, of course, but it's growing. But especially when I see adults play in these clubs and everything and at game stores, it's a lot more equal and diverse just because... I think when they reach adulthood, they're like, look, if I want to play this game, I want to play this game, and I'm going to play it. And that's how I wish younger people viewed it, because I've definitely gotten a lot of crap when people find out I play D&D.
But do you view it that way? Like, because if you don't view it like, because that's the one thing about youth is, or as when you're young, you think in almost like black and white terms when it comes to this, because this, like, me and Nathan understand where it's like, no, it's not a big deal, because we know because we've had that experience where it's like, we're not going to see these people a lot, and who gives a crap what they think, because these are high school friends or high school people that we interact with. But I don't hang out with them. I don't see them, and I don't care what they think of what I'm doing, because I'm enjoying what I'm doing. And the people that matter, like family, very, very close friends, their opinion is okay about it. They're okay with me doing it because they know that I enjoy it so much. So I wonder if it just like youth. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like youth, how they view their lives is like, I even have this. I'll freely admit it. I think that high school is the only thing that's ever going to happen. Yeah. Oh, this is the only girl or thing I'll ever get or whatever, which I'll freely admit. Like, that's what I think right now, which I recognize that, and I don't want to think like that. Yeah. But I think it's just how we think. We're like, yeah, this high school, we have to impress everybody. We have to do this. We have to do that. And just... like, we wouldn't like that. So that's why I think D&D isn't as popular as it could be in high school, just because of that stigma. But to address an earlier part of your question, how I really feel about it, I feel D&D, it's like a lot of things, right? It's good in moderation. It's true, though, if you're playing it all the time, if you're using it as a way to escape reality all the time, you're going to end up as a 40-year-old guy living in his mom's basement, mm-hmm. not doing anything.
Yeah.
But that's a small percentage of people. There's mm-hmm. also a lot of people that are like, they're just playing the game as a hobby. They might be not the most successful people, but they might be really successful people in terms of happiness
yeah.
or in terms of that, right? But I think the game is really, it's really for, I think anybody could like the game. With with a certain group, anybody could like the game. So,
no,
yeah.
And like, I feel that way with sports.
Yeah.
Like, if you find the right person, any sport that they teach you will be fun.
Yeah.
Just fun because they're enthusiastic about it. They love it, and they want you to succeed. That's what they want to do. And like you said earlier, like with the DM, like if you get a really good DM, people would enjoy it. You would enjoy it. It's because that person wants you to have a fun time, and they're going to do what they can to have you make it a fun time as best as they can do it. And then you come with a good attitude, and you come like, okay, I'm going to experience it. I'm going to do my best. It makes that experience even more and even greater, and it lights a fire like, oh, I love doing this. I would love doing this and all this stuff. Exactly. Like, I think it's the right person to come and teach you something. Like, come and teach you how to play D&D. Probably makes it so much better than if it's like, oh, this person, that they're just teaching me D&D. It's like, it's just not as fun.
Oh, sorry about that.
It's all right.
What?
So the only thing to add of like what you were saying earlier, though, with like the phase in high school, and like the only thing that I probably would say, and you openly admit that like you feel like high school is the only thing right now, and that you kind of have to live up your high school experience, which I think everybody feels, because it's like once in a lifetime opportunity, and this is what I'm gonna like tell my kids, this is what I was like in high school or whatever. And I could see that for sure. It is very small, and I think you realize that, but I don't think you fully realize, and neither do we. We're not like 70 years old and see how small of a blip that is. but what I was going to say is, I was really though, like looking back, even like, cause it's been like 11 years since I've been in high school, like the coolest people, and this is very easy to say, but harder to do, that as long as you weren't harming anybody or doing whatever, the people that just didn't give a crap of like, were actually like the coolest people in a way. Right. And it's a confidence thing. Like even me in high school, like I struggled with like, you know, just being my true self and not caring. Like I had really close friends and they were cool, but like sometimes they imposed certain things and I felt insecure and I didn't want to be, but I think, and obviously it's your experience in high school, but D&D is a cool thing for the most part, right? Like, and the people that are there, like, and do it, that's, let your colors fly, Sawyer. Let them fly.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a cool experience, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
And, like, I think with what you found is a passion of a hobby. It took me, like, you know, I've gone through phases with hobbies. Like, I would do beads. I would juggle. I would write letters. You know, just phases of a hobby. And finally finding one in doing podcasting, it took a very long time to do it. Or a very long time to get there, but finding it early, like what you've done, like that is, like some for me, sometimes looking at that for a young person like you, it's like, I wish I was able to find this a lot, or you know, find a hobby that I enjoy doing, where it's like, this is what I'm thinking about earlier in life than later in life. Like, but at the same time, I'm happy of being able to find one and just be excited about one. And that's what, like, I think that is just one awesome thing that you did find as a young man trying to just be the best person you possibly can be. I think that's just awesome. I think that's awesome. But thank you for coming and thank you for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, got man. A good good head on you, Sawyer. Got a good head.
Can't say the same about you, Nate.
Well, yeah. Retracting that.
David, if you erase that, please. Unsubscribe.
No, man. I just listen, make sure that there's not a lot of dead air, and that's all I do. I don't cut anything out.
Good.
Because I love... This whole time, it was, for me, it was fun. I massively enjoyed it. So, thank you for joining us for this episode of Crackers and Milk. Thank you, Sawyer. Thank you, Nathan, for joining. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and comment. Help us out. And thank you so much. Have a good day. Remember, make good choices. Build. Don't destroy.